Okay, it's Law Enforcement Advisory Committee meeting for Monday, September 10th. Steve, would you please call order and take roll call, please?
Okay. John Whitman?
Here.
Eric Reynolds? Jay Wasserman? Richard Murr? Ruben Ibarra?
Here.
Tom Dodge?
Here.
Vince Rossini?
Here.
Wayne Sinzel?
Here.
Lieutenant Rich?
Here.
And I'm Steve Franks. We have a quorum.
Okay, seeing no one from the public, we'll move on from public comment and approve meetings from the July 11th meeting, if everyone could take a look at those. I'm sorry, June 11th meeting, and take a look at that.
Sorry, thanks.
You got one?
I got one.
He sent it to me, I downloaded it.
I did not, I looked at it, but it wasn't printed out.
I move approval. Second.
Any objections? Hearing none, we'll approve them. Okay, regular business items. We'll pass this over to Lieutenant Rich for A and B, which is an update on the transient situation.
Let me give you real quick on the homeless people.
Yeah.
In those meetings.
Yes, you have been.
Yeah, the Judge Carter called in the ACLU and the four cities that are in Anaheim, Orange. He had Santa Ana and Costa Mesa. Placentia, Buena Park, and a number of other cities were also in attendance because they have identified some sites. He's basically, in the North County cities, there are 13 North County cities, Villa Park included, that have identified sites in Placentia and Buena Park that could be used as shelters. So he's given them basically 45 days to come up with some details on that. And the plaintiffs are the ACLU, and they're ready to serve anybody who's not participating. On an FYI, the City Council will be going into closed session on the 19th regarding that item. The plaintiffs are ready to settle with Anaheim and Santa Ana because Santa Ana is proposing a 700-bed facility, and Anaheim has a number of different beds that they're proposing at the Salvation Army facility, et cetera, the old Salvation Army, if you know where that is, and a couple of other sites. Santa Ana and Anaheim are close to resolving. What that settlement is interesting because the judge has indicated that he would provide him insulation from any further federal cases. However, the appellate court, Ninth Circuit Court of just recently approved a decision in Boise, Idaho case that said that the camping ordinances cannot be enforced if there's not an equal number of beds for someone who wants to use them. Now, if somebody doesn't want to use, a homeless person doesn't want to use them, you can enforce the camping ordinance. However, that's pretty much 100% bed for bed. Now, what's interesting is Judge Carter was only asking the cities to come up with a 60%. You know, in other words, you only have to have beds for 60% of them. North County has 1,400 count, roughly, of homeless that they can count. That would mean about, what is that? I'm not good at math, but that's...
Compared to
60% of 1,400 would be
about
800
or so, and the North County cities have come up with a close to 800 number. If you go to 100%, that's going to be really difficult to meet. Now he may be able to the county and everybody is saying that even if the cities were to come up with that and get insulation from the ACLU, that doesn't prohibit someone else suing them based on that decision.
Well, see, the problem with that is your homeless populations are going to continue to increase. So every time, so 1 week the ordinance is in effect because you can do it, and then all of a sudden 500 people show up, and
so now your ordinance is kind of an interesting, you know, you got an interesting dilemma, and that what's happening is it's not only the anti-camping ordinances, it's the loitering ordinances, it's pretty much...
All your status type violations are things that they're, right. You know, mm-hmm. The courts consider it's because they're homeless is the reasons why they're violating these statutes, right. And these municipalities. Yes.
So the South County...
That's an assumption, though, because there's many that don't simply, right. Refuse to go into a homeless facility. Mm-hmm. Are they part of the
No, they are not part of the. In other words, if they refuse to go in a facility, you don't have to have a bed for them, and you can enforce. However, all they got to do is say, "Sure, I'll go somewhere."
But from what I understand, though, Wayne, you have to count those people that don't even want help now as part of the number of beds you need.
You don't have to count them, but you have to have a bed. When you approach them, you have to have, before you say, right. you can't stay here, you have to know that there's a bed available.
But you can't tell them they can't stay here unless you had the same number of beds available for the entire homeless population.
That wants beds.
Okay,
so now the South County cities have not come forward with anything, and so the ACLU indicated to Judge Carter that they will begin serving them this weekend. This coming up week, so they'll be brought into the lawsuit. Oh, it's going to get pretty ugly and contentious. But that's pretty much where it is. There's a closed session. Lieutenant can fill in any details, but it makes sort of enforcement a problem.
It's a tight wire. And one of the things that we have homeless outreach teams in North County that I supervise, and they do a very good job of documenting who they're dealing with, who they're talking with, the homeless people they're encountering. They're working with a healthcare agency on a daily basis. They're out there with them, and they're out there talking to people, and they're completing field identification cards and field interview cards. And one of the things that they're documenting every time is that they have offered services to these people.
So that's the important thing too. The bridges at Kramer is not counted in these beds because the Judge Carter wants what he calls low barrier, and low barrier means someone could walk up to them and say, "I want to stay here overnight," like the courtyard in Santa Ana. Or the armories. They cannot do that at bridges. They have to have an appointment or a referral to get into the bridges at Kramer. So he's not letting the North County count those cities. We've made the argument, the attorneys have made the argument, et cetera. But it's sort of a Judge Carter, if you know him, is pretty outspoken. And you know, he said, "I don't care, this is what it is." The other issue then is he wants that you've got to build permanent supportive housing beds for after. Because you know, otherwise then you have a dead end putting these people in shelters. They just sit there, and you do get what you say, John. If you can't move them on, that bed becomes occupied forever, and you've lost that number of beds. So you have to move these people into long-term solution-oriented type of situations. So,
and the more you build, the more people will come here for free housing.
That's sort of the contention, but you know, the county is doing a new count. However, they did account for Villa Park. They did account for North County cities. North County City's paid, and we have a number. So Villa Park had none at that time of homeless. The problem is we have homeless here at times because we've had to call on situation.
People passing through.
Sleeping overnight and sort of visiting and sort of, you know, we're not immune from the potential issue. And if you don't have enforcement capabilities, that's a challenge. So it's a challenge for everybody. It's for you, for enforcement.
It's a daily issue. It's an issue that changes quite frequently. There's a lot of different court cases going on, a lot of decisions made that affect what we can do and what we can't do. And you know, there's cases from, as in you know, the recent case upheld by the Ninth. There is a lot of court cases from outside of our immediate area that have an effect on what we can do and how we do it.
Now, Boise's indicated from what I understand that they will be pursuing that with the Supreme Court appeal, but that doesn't mean it happens.
Right. No. Question. Mm-hmm. Are we in a situation here where we could use, I'm thinking mutual aid, but where Anaheim has additional units more so than we could provide adequate?
Well, that's what the concept is with this. They call them SPAs, service provider areas. The 13 cities would sort of be able to have beds, so we would be accessing Anaheim's beds or Placentia's beds or Buena Park's beds. The issue will be, are you making a financial contribution? Because if I'm Anaheim, I'm saying you can't use my bed if you're not paying something. So that's a discussion, like I say, that we'll have in closed session with the council. Okay. But that's sort of the issue. The 13 cities up north are saying, we're all going to contribute. We're all going to have access. They become regional beds, if you will.
Wouldn't it be wise simply to simplify the thing by kind of having, like we have with insurance, where you have a community that says, hey, here's the cost, and the total cost to provide the service to the 13 cities is X. Okay, how many population do you have you're charged with this?
Well, that's what we're discussing at this point, where the cities are talking about. Exactly. No, you're right on track, and that's what the North County cities are doing. That I can't answer for the Central or South because I'm not part of those meetings, but I know the South County has done nothing, pretty much. The Central has done, like I say, Santa Ana's come up with a site for 700 beds. Their city council's approved it. Buena Park's in escrow, I believe, on their site. Placentia's in escrow on their site.
And
so
North County's been very proactive addressing the issue and being engaged and not just kind of thinking it's going to not be an issue.
I mean, it's pretty hard to think that if Orange has a problem, to think that those people would never migrate here. I think we don't have a border that you can enforce with walls and things.
One of the advantages I think we do have, though, is just seeing the way homeless interact is we don't have a large commercial area or a park, and that's generally where they like to go because they're not going to go to your front yard and no one's going to call the police.
Yeah.
Generally at night, you know, when businesses are shut down. So that could be advantageous.
Private property you can enforce, unless I'm mistaken. You can enforce. Oh, yeah. You can't enforce on public properties.
Right, and that's the... But because we have a majority of private property in Villa Park, we, unlike most...
Like you said, you can't go camp on someone's lawn and say, hey, I'm homeless, I can camp here, you can't enforce it. But
yeah, exactly.
They have a little bit more leeway.
But they can camp out right out in front of the city hall here. Yes.
And forgive me, and I know I asked this before, but do we have a property ordinance as far as amount of property that one can possess and have?
About the homeless individuals?
Right, just in general.
You would run into major problems if you tried to enforce someone like that right now with what's in front of the court and Judge Carter, because there's storage issues when you move someone.
He's ordered that there have to be stored. But Santa Ana has the thing where they have to store people's properties.
Right, yeah. And, you know, in certain areas, you know, they couldn't have... But I think technically it was 3x3 feet of property.
Yeah, he's allowing dogs and everything else.
Right. Now, so two dogs, three dogs.
When is Judge Carter's up for election?
Never.
He's a lifetime appointee.
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought I'd ask.
He's a lifetime appointee. And he's made it really clear in his hearings, if you sit in with him, that he's not going anywhere and he feels very good health. He's a former Marine, served in Vietnam, and he says he's in his early 70s, and he's going to be around.
And from legal perspective, what was the, based on the Boise case, because that was kind of what held us over for a long time from enforcing, and then they kind of came up with an agreement, and then we were allowed. And then now with the Ninth Circuit case, where they basically said we can't criminalize it, are we spinning our wheels with Judge Carter if Boise's already, or if the Ninth has already said that, well, you can't legalize it?
Well, but the issue is Carter has two cases in front of him, whereas no one else filed at this point. So if you can settle with the ACLU at this point, the advantage would be maybe you do settle with them. That's sort of the argument, that you buy yourself some time or something. I mean, it's a policy call. It truly is a policy call.
Right.
It's not going to get better. It's not going to, you know, it could get worse. But
this is all another impact from Prop 47 and AB 109 because, you know, my understanding is when that riverbed was cleared out, how many hypodermic syringes did they find down there?
Thousands.
50,000.
And back when all that stuff was a felony, you know, those people would have been getting arrested right and left and going to jail for all that stuff. And that would have cleaned up. That would have cleaned up the problem, right?
Property
down.
Crimes and everything. Else.
Definitely been some issues with 47, 57, and AB 109 on the enforcement angle and decriminalizing a lot of stuff that was.
And now we're getting everyone else's homeless too because it's a free pass here in California.
One of the things that Carter has a real big issue with, and you hear, he doesn't like the fact right now that if Orange has a homeless person, they take him to Santa Ana Courtyard because he calls that dumping. And he does not like that. He's very opposed. And the city of Santa Ana is opposed. I mean, you know, that, rightfully so. Their population just grew and Orange just decreased. So it's a challenge. So if you have the other advantage to have a mutual agreement of these areas is that we could have placement of people, move them in through the system or whatever.
What happens when a state decides that they'll buy airline tickets and call dumping when they send them to California? See, they don't
And I guess from my perspective, being that we're such a very small community with at times a nil when it comes to homeless, you know, knock on wood, the question would be is how much do we contribute to that pool? Yeah. And then the question will be is, okay, let's just say that there's two available beds, you know, for Villa Park, but we don't use them for a little while. So Anaheim's like, well, we'll use them. And then... Right. When we really need them, they call. No, we don't have any beds available. You know,
well,
I think
there, it's sort of a business decision too.
Yes.
Is, and I mean, I hate to say this, but a business decision way is, If the amount you're contributing is less than you think the legal expense would be, then it makes sense to do it. If the legal expense becomes more, then you know, then you sort of made the decision made for you.
Right.
So that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
That's a common sense way to do it.
Think of the Pinto, right? The Pinto case.
Yes. But
right?
Yes, that's exactly.
So I think that's what we're kind of looking at.
The principle comes down to it. We had a gal sue here in the city for a twisted ankle before we had that little step out in front of City Hall. $137. And, you know, the potential for people to sue for twisted ankles was great if they got mad at us for a decision in city council. So the decision was fought for about half an hour over, it's a matter of principle. You can't pick up your feet, don't expect us to pay for the bill.
Well, the other thing, too, and I don't want to speak for the
sheriff. I don't want to get into it, but cost is a factor where Anaheim could well charge us $1,000 a night.
No, it is. Right. We have total cost of the total operation, which we have, and that's the.
So we need some controls on that, because there have been other cities that have loved to poke a stick in our eye.
Well, this would. We're working through a lot. That's what we're working through. You know, the other thing, and I need to keep in. I don't want to speak for the sheriff. Is I'm not aware of any anti-camping enforcement activities that have happened in Villa Park in quite some time.
There has not been.
However, that potential does exist. I mean, you just got to understand that we can't, we're not immune. And we have had people on Villa Park Road go down into the reservoir.
That's county.
Well, I know it's county, but the access, they go right down Villa Park Road. It's a.
When I think of Wanda, also just that little beltway there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunity. So you can't pretend it couldn't happen. That's sort of, you got to kind of weigh it. So it's going to be a business decision. The council's going to have to weigh in and give us some direction, and that's where we're going. And I know it's a difficult challenge because we had somebody just the other day come in, and he was a homeless person hanging out here, and they had a person come check with him. He had no priors. He was from out of state, and he was hanging out with a shopping cart. And what do you do? And so the deputy says, what do you want me to do with him? I can't, you know. I said, well, offer him help if there's a bed somewhere you know of. But the guy says he can be here. He's got a shopping cart. He hasn't done anything. He's sitting out
probably front. Graduated from our rehab facility. Sober living.
Do we have a shopping cart ordinance?
Well, he was shopping. I mean, he literally had a Ralph's one, which is three stores down. So it was nothing. Not the ordinary. He's totally allowed to bring it within a shopping center.
Not Target.
It wasn't a Kmart or or something. So.
And then in some of the areas there along the creek and the riverbed and things of that nature. Have we looked to make sure everything is fortified?
Yeah, we have. In fact, we've on Adams Ranch Road, we've put up, I've spent a considerable amount of time down there. We finally have this new kind of fencing that I got the flood control district to put up, which is pretty hard to get through, but they probably do. They can go down on Collins and just, they walk through the fence and they get wire cutters, or they come down on San Diego Creek and just come on through.
Oh, there's
a long way.
There's a gap down there in the fencing wide enough to drive a tank through.
Where at, on Collins?
On Collins,
yeah.
Right at. It actually is a space between the block walls for the residents and the chain link fence.
So incidentally, that is unincorporated land that could be, annexed by the City of Orange or Villa Park.
No, it has to be, it's an Orange's Villa sphere of influence. So
just because LAFCO says.
Yeah, we'd have to go back through LAFCO and get Orange's approval to get it switched into our. I've gone through that investigator with LAFCO. The mayor had a really good idea, we tried it. But Orange said, we don't want to. And furthermore, you have to have consent of the landowner. And Orange has, I mean, the water district has no real desire to be
caught up in a
water turf war. So they're saying, hey, we're happy, we're just leave us. And they don't want to do anything.
It's not really usable for much of anything.
It is, they go down in there. They do go down
in there. Yeah, I know, but as far as the city is concerned, owning it wouldn't help us any.
No, just control over it.
No, but they could solve it as a homeless shelter. Put up a nice hot homeless shelter. They did a pretty good job at the park.
There's homeless. There's
All right. Move on to monthly crime stats. Traffic and parking enforcement to Lieutenant Rich.
All right. For the month of August, which we will cover in this meeting, we had no reportable traffic collisions, which was great. There were two that our deputies responded to. They were actually determined to have occurred in the City of Orange. Issued 43 traffic citations and 7 parking citations. Did spend such a considerable amount of time around the schools because school started last month, and just high visibility patrol, and had both the SRO and the deputy out there kind of flying the colors just to try to ease the traffic issues that we may have.
What were the Parkers again, LT? Sorry about that.
Seven,
thank you.
Seven.
Well, I should be writing this down.
We did have
43 citations.
43 sites, 43 seven
movers
Parkers.
And seven Parkers. We have had couple complaints regarding the crossing guard over off of by the high school over there.
Being not the presence, the quality of the crossing.
Yes, being a little aggressive, I think, with
well,
people.
At least we got a crossing guard over there, right?
Yep.
We do have a crossing guard over there, and
that's just they had some trouble getting somebody in the past because you guys contract. It's not a sheriff personnel; it's a contract they run, and it's a challenge to get people of quality.
It's a company called American Guard Services, and that's currently under consideration for a new 2-year contract with the sheriff's department. I know the board, or there is a recommendation in front of the board, and waiting for board of supervisors' approval. And how that works is. The board funds this, and with the companies, and there's two that typically either all cities or American Guard who come out and have been with the county for probably the last 10 years, and then they once the contract's awarded, they go out and they're told these positions that they need to man. They have people that they have trained up and they have manned, or if it switches between the two providers, they'll typically reach out and go out and grab the other people's employees because they're all, you know, usually older or people that just want to work part-time because they may have families or kids going to school because they're only working 3 hours a day. They work like an hour and a half in the morning, an hour and a half in the night. So we're very fortunate for the most part in the quality of people that they're able to get in there. Their training is pretty sophisticated for what you're actually getting. But you do have every once in a while people that are a little overzealous in their enforcement, and you know, I have had issues with people banging on cars and stopping people in the middle of crosswalks to make a point, but that's being addressed right now with Deputy Benzi. So he's out there every morning keeping a very close eye on what's going on. If he witnesses something that is improper, it will be addressed with this person's company. If he doesn't, then we'll let him know in a couple of days of the complaints and do some re-education on our end with the company on what's expected of other people.
They need to put somebody down by Villa Park Elementary. Really badly.
There is a traffic committee, and this is the process for doing that. If someone believes that we have a school or we need a crossing guard, there's an issue, it can be brought up to the traffic committee. The traffic committee will then look at it, do a little study, make a recommendation. Their recommendation goes over to the board. If the board approves it, they will put a crossing guard out there.
It only lasts for as long as the principal stays at that school. Then it changes. Mm-hmm. And the new principal comes in and she doesn't know anything about it, so everything falls back to chaos. And so this has gone on more times than that.
Well, she has no control over the crossing guard.
She should not.
That's no, but she can. She has PTA or PFO meetings, and she can educate the parents on the do's and don'ts. So don't turn your kid loose on Lincoln and make him walk across in front of the traffic to the school.
Doors on the traffic.
So and it just and then turning left turning when the flow is intended to be right turn only, so it keeps moving. And little things like that.
The left turns are a big issue there. Yes.
So
yes,
sorry, educate me on the traffic committee. Is that county traffic committee?
Yeah, county. We do it for the city of Villa Park. We do it. It comes through the council. Functions the same basic way.
Okay.
It is a city expense. The school district doesn't pay.
Okay.
And I want to say it's not really cheap. It's
quite a bit of money, isn't it?
$10,000 plus per.
It is.
It becomes pretty expensive. So we'll talk a little bit about what we're talking for Villa Park Road and Center, because we've had some things later. And you'll see both on Serrano and Villa Park Road. I'm jumping here to E, but so
did,
you know.
Did I miss the crime stats?
We got sidetracked.
Yeah, we interrupted.
No taxis, 43 moving.
Right, I was just wondering about burglaries or thefts or anything along those lines.
Yeah, we did get sidetracked.
Yes, we did. And I went off on a tangent, and I went to county crossing guards instead of city crossing guards. And Steve was kind enough not to interrupt me and say, hey, dude, you don't know what you're talking about, because I was totally off guard.
That's all right. We're totally interested in hearing about it.
Yeah. As far as crime stats, and I'm going to give you a little rundown of by day of what we had, because it was actually a very peaceful month in August. On the 9th, off of Durfee Lane, we had two vehicles, unlocked vehicles that were rummaged through, no loss. On the 9th, we also, I'm going to bring this up because not really a crime stat for the city, but one of our deputies had a very nice car stop. He wound up seizing 10 pounds of marijuana that the person admitted was possessed for sale.
Not personal use.
No, that's a little more that's a lot of personal use.
I had a guy with 2.5 kilos once, and I was like, wow, that's going to be one hell of a party.
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah, okay, can you break down exactly how much you smoke? And I'll even give you the Costco theory on this, buddy. It's, you're not going to be able to prove that. I'm sorry. On the 14th, we had a reported burglary off of Aberdeen. That was jewelry that was missing from a safe. Occurred within a two-month period, and there was no signs of forced entry to the safe or to the residence.
In Aberdeen?
Yes. On the 16th, there was a leaf blower taken off of a parked vehicle, a gardener working in the area. On the 22nd, we had a report over here at the Ralphs of a lost wallet. Within 10 minutes of the wallet being dropped out of a purse, and was pretty sure that it was dropped out of the purse, someone attempted to use the credit cards unsuccessfully, fortunately. There is video to that that our investigators are currently working with. And on the 23rd, another car stop by the same deputy who found the 10 pounds of marijuana and wound up making a car stop of people who were just passing through, apparently. Consent search of the vehicle. He located a bunch of stolen checks that were stolen out of the city of Mission Viejo and Yorba Linda. Ooh. At a mailbox type theft. So
there's been three car stops in the last 2 months that I have recognized, in my opinion, go above and beyond the average deputy stops. Neither through good training, perseverance, investigative techniques, whatever. They've resulted in significant activity and criminal intervention, and I think that should be noted. I'm sure the Sheriff's Department and your own supervisors are doing that, but if there's anything as a city, I think that we should recognize that deputy, because unless I'm mistaken, last month we had a felon with a firearm,
yes.
Right? Is this the same deputy?
It is.
That deputy needs to be recognized.
Deputy Carras, and he's doing a phenomenal job. He's very aggressive. He's actually new off of training and new to the city, but he's very active. He's very smart. He does some great investigations, and he realizes, he sees, you know, people going through, even though Villa Park's a very, you know, very small city, and that he realizes people passing through, it's people coming from other areas that are committing the crimes in here, and he's... If he sees something that, you know, needs to be addressed and he thinks he should talk to, he's very good at talking to them and working his way into seeing what criminal activity they're involved in. So.
I'd love to see that deputy recognized, make sure he understands he has a home here in Villa Park.
I would love to do that.
Okay.
Great.
So whatever you two gentlemen want to work on,
whatever's
appropriate.
LT, have you noticed an increase at all on evening burgs, like around dinner time? Because I know my neighbors across the street... they went to dinner, or they were actually, it was right at dinner time, but someone kicked in their front door, right at the front door. They had a glass face on the inside, kicked open the door, face got knocked over. The wife had just got home at the time, went in the house, dog was barking, went in there and then found the back slider open. So obviously it was an interruption. I guess they did find some drawers opened up in one of the bedrooms, but there was no loss. She got home and scared them off, but... They had mentioned to me when I was talking to them after the fact that they had heard that there had been an increase and that they knew someone else in another area that right around dinner time.
That was in July.
Okay.
I'm very familiar with that incident. We had that incident. We actually had a burglary that occurred on the same night. There were no other residential burglaries that month, and we had none in August. And one of the things that we deal with and we're kind of dealing with a lot now is social media. And when things happen, and they do happen, they get a lot of activity and a lot of time and a lot of press and social media. So things get spun up a little bit.
Yeah.
And people start thinking there's been a huge increase or, you know, there's something's going on. And, you know, I don't want to downplay that happening to your neighbors. It's horrible. I wouldn't want anyone to, you know, be victimized in their house. Someone coming to anyone's house is
well,
horrible.
And I did,
but
it
gets a lot of this stuff gets built up and amplify through social media and the social media sites. And it's, you know, it's a new phenomenon. that we're dealing with in law enforcement and definitely, you know, everywhere is social media really puts a big spin on this, and people hear it over and over again. In one incident, you know, they hear about it 20 different times, so mm-hmm. it gets amplified a lot. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reports of things really getting out of control.
That happens and with Neighborhood Watch, too. The older people yeah. living alone tend to exaggerate the issues. Mm-hmm. And it's feeling insecure. We've noticed it actually goes down, though, when you get them involved in the...
We had the same thing happen, remember the bobcat sighting? We had a bobcat sighting in March, and for the next 3 months, every night we heard that they saw another bobcat, which is people repeating that and taking picture, reprinting a picture of a bobcat that was seen. So it was like we had animal control out of here five times 1 week, and it was all the same picture and the same people carried over. So it is that social media thing.
It's just part of the...
Well, and a lot of what we do in law enforcement is a sense of security that people have in their home, and we want to be able to provide that for people. And if they don't, you know, they don't feel that, then we're not doing our job, and it's unfortunate. And we're still trying to learn how to work our way around the social media and all the extra press and attention that isolated incidents get.
So. I thought that one was a little unusual. That, you know, 5 o'clock time frame to kick in a front door because of the noise factor, and you figure most people are home at 5 o'clock. Right. So that I thought that was pretty brazen when I heard that.
Sounds like an angry neighbor or something.
It happens. These burglaries are occurring, and that is one that we're seeing a lot of burglaries. Fortunately, not in Villa Park, but in the surrounding areas and throughout the county is. People working in groups, and they're coming from Riverside, they're coming from, you know, LA, and they're, you know, they'll go knock up and they'll knock on a door, or they'll ring the doorbell, and they'll see if there's a response. And we've had it, you know, where there's no one's home, and they do kick the door in and commit the burglary. I've had it in other areas that we, you know, we cover where they are home, and they're slow getting to the door, they're not expecting someone, so they don't answer the door, and the next thing you know, someone's trying to kick in their door. And, you know, then they'll say something or they'll scream and yell, and someone will be like, oh, man, there's someone home, and they'll take off. But that is a trend, you know, going on. Fortunately, we've been very, you know, fortunate in Villa Park, and we haven't had a lot of those going on. But that's, you know, on the July 22nd, we did have one confirmed burglary, and I would say the door kick was an attempted.
Do we utilize LPR readers at all in Villa Park? In any or with units or anything of that nature.
The sheriff
was a discussion what 3 years ago. We got into that pretty good.
It's amazing how robust that system is now, and
we do have an LPR. I can't tell you the last time it was in Villa Park. We don't have them on the cars, but we have the stationary one, and it's the speed limit sign. If you see the speed limit sign, that's, you know, comes up that says, "Hey, speed limit's 55. You're going 45," and it does have an LPR in there.
Tremendously accurate.
What's that?
I've been tracking the one down on Villa Park Road, and I've deliberately gone through there at about 37 miles an hour, and it says I'm doing 43.
Yeah, but I'm not so much looking at the speeders. I'm tracking about the data associated with the LPRs.
Mm-hmm. License plate readers.
We went through this 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
We got a little repercussion from the community on that.
And that's the downside to it.
They didn't want us tracking...
Big brother. It is an issue with Big Brother, and it's a great investigative tool.
You know, there's one thing we might do. Nextdoor is a website that people are using throughout the eastern part of the country. They're in sections, and people are putting down that they're going on vacation. And I wish that somebody would get to Nextdoor and issue a few rules of proper use of this public website, because that encourages. That encourages people to...
we shouldn't get a hold of Nextdoor. We should get a hold of the resident and says you shouldn't...
We should educate our residents. Nextdoor is, in the law enforcement world, I'm familiar with them. Jeez. It's very difficult for me to deal with.
Yeah.
And they will share information amongst the community and community members. With me in law enforcement, I have a very difficult time getting into Nextdoor and posting anything that... You know, trying to explain why something's happening or getting the truth out about something.
We have two of them. One is in Mayberry Ranch, and they've blown a lot of things out of proportion. And there's another one down on Adams Ranch Road.
We've suffered from Neighborhood Watch with it because they claim all the crime that you're covering up all the crime that's actually occurring in Villa Park, and yet we've had to point out, look. next door is covering the whole area from here through Orange Park Acres. It's not Bill Park. Oh, yes, it is, you talk. We're dealing with the same issue, education.
This month's AARP magazine, and I should have brought it, has suggestions what to do and not to do when you're going on vacation.
Yeah. Well, the other thing you need to be careful of, and I'm just going to tell you, First Amendment rights, you do not want to get on a social media and tell a platform that they can't do something because you are might as well line yourself up for a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Facebook, Neighbor right. Watch, I mean, First My Neighbor, whatever you call that one, you just said.
Next door. From the Villa Park, which is where I get the great traffic stops by our deputies, been doing a great, and then you guys respond to me right away when I say, great work, 18, and they obviously know it's me. But couldn't we publish something, you know, tips, public safety tips?
We'd be happy to do it on ours if you can get us something, if you get her to do it.
So and we do. We'll
don't advertise being on vacation, on social media. I mean, just
have her just
very
send
general.
Over to me and we'll publish it, shoot out in a feeder or somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure AARP magazine would be happy to give, as long as you give them credit, to let you republish what they put in their magazine.
And they probably even have something on social media that you could just repost and get out there.
Yeah. Okay.
We could put vacation tips out there. And.
All right, well, crime's still down, so that's good. So we'll move on to Neighborhood Watch program and National Night Out. Wayne?
Very successful, particularly this past year. We noticed a definite increase in turnout of younger families. We really appreciate the Sheriff's Department went all out. Those of you who probably were there noticed the additional coverage. I mean, we had every...
And how's the Sheriff's Department here?
It was amazing. Yeah.
Three dogs, they had a bomb squad, they had everybody.
And people love it.
Yeah, they really do. And, you know, what I like is the moms made an effort to educate their kids on why the National Night Out, you know. Hey, these people are our friends. They're not law enforcement officers per se. Yeah. And it went very well. I think we could increase the number had we had it after school started, but August wasn't the choice month for volume of turnout. So we might think about doing that. But Deputy Rich wants us to use it. All the cities at the same time and the county, and that's fine. Perhaps there could be some discussion on moving it to the last week of September, early October, something more attuned with having the parents bring the kids downtown. Otherwise,
well, is it National Night Out? It's supposed to be one day nationally. So
the other thing you're competing with is Orange has it at Home Depot with.
That's right.
Games going on and rides.
There's far more attraction over there.
Yeah, they bring up the jumpies or whatever they call them.
But is National Night Out determined by each city rather than, or is it?
National Night Out is the first Tuesday in August.
So we got to
nationally. If we want to discuss doing something else, I'm not opposed to that. I don't know if we could call it National Night Out. We could call it Get to Know Villa Park Law Enforcement or something like that and do something. But
let's leave it alone.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll say the weather. I mean, it was. Yeah. We've had a very, very warm summer. And I know because I was there that night and I looked at these poor guys sweating in their uniform. It was a hot, hot, warm night. So, you know, weather permitting, and I know it's August, it's always going to be warm, but I think that the weather worked against us a little bit. And nonetheless, like you said, we still had a great turnout.
How many block captains were you able to recruit?
Five more?
Yeah, what are we up to on numbers?
Now. And that brings you up to what?
Over 200. It's around 203. Wow. You know, we have to go back and audit and make sure how many have moved out of town. Once in a while, you got to do that. But it sounds good for, but it is... It is. We got a list of names of 204. I think.
PSRs. Jay's not here. So
nope.
Just skip that.
The only thing going on with PSRs in Villa Park is we were there for National Night Out.
Yep. And you guys were looking good, looking sharp. We appreciate that.
All right.
Signage. I just want to mention here that we've had some parents come forward, and so we have. Decided, you know, they talked about another stop sign in Serrano and some things, but we've kind of come to the conclusion that you can't put a stop sign because we don't meet the state standards for that. But we can put in pedestrian signs that light and flash. So we'll be doing something on both Villa Park Road and Serrano that we can do it, that are solar type of thing that can be activated by the pedestrians so that it sort of...
Someone grabs your attention and says, be careful.
So we'll be doing those. We don't want to wait till somebody gets hurt before, you know. And the residents who we told are doing this are like, that's a good step for them. They're happy.
And we got a good... You guys got a really good compliment for the one at Lemon.
Right, we just got... And there are other people are out there. They're just less vocal.
Those ground ones.
And they haven't been...
The what?
The ground ones.
Stirred up, yeah.
The ground ones become very expensive. Yeah. So they're like $25,000 to install in the road. But we can do a solar one for maybe a third of that price that has, you know, orange. A lot of cities are going to them now because they're activated by the pedestrians. They blink and they're not blinking all the time, but they're blinking. And
Signs got to ring it.
Yeah.
Well, but they're yellow and it's kind of, they catch everybody's attention. So on Serrano, we'll be installing them, and on Villa Park Road and Center.
Any update on that right turn to Taft and Santiago?
Yeah, it's a shared intersection, and Orange has absolutely no interest in
it. You know what? I drove by there and looked at it, too, and to me, since there's not a right turn lane there, and if you get someone that pulls that's in the number two lane, mm-hmm. and they're over, there's not going to be enough room to get between a car and the curb.
So you'd have a right arrow,
and no one would be able to use it if you got one car blocking. Right. They would probably have to restripe or widen or do something to make it feasible, I think.
Orange has no real interest because the backup isn't affect them, really. It affects us.
Yeah.
So I don't really see it.
I think that's a dead issue there.
Yeah, so they're Public Works and their city manager, and just they're not interested in pursuing it. Because they'd have to bear, you know, we charge them perhaps. They have to realign the signals and do all that.
Right. And what about Eric's crosswalk replacement over there?
That one
Lincoln?
We are doing down there. Okay. We're going to do something down there.
Okay, so that's still in the works. Okay. Anyone else got anything on that?
I think we've spoken, Steve and I have offline about... making sure that all of our stop signs, the verbiage on the roadway and the limit lines are
bold,
bright, repainted. Several portions of the city, they've been faded. They're faded, and in conjunction with a lot of the infrastructure work that's going on throughout the city, Steve and the rest of the staff has stepped up and working with the sheriff.
You see, there's a new. Put a bigger sign on Taft,
Sycamore,
and Sycamore.
Yeah.
Because people couldn't see it. They said they couldn't see it, so we put a huge one and we restriped it, and your deputies, as the guys were restriping, people were flying through there. Anyway, so the deputy had to stop traffic while they were restriping it because it was going pretty fast. Anyway, long story short, we have a larger sign now, more visible, and even the residents have said thank you, it's working better. But we, as part of the pavement that's going to be going on here with all the big project, you'll see there's a whole element of restriping all the street, all the stop signs and things like that. So you're going to see a lot more clear stripe. But I mean, people are going to ignore it. So it's all about enforcement.
And from my perspective, I just want to make sure that when your deputies do write these tickets, they've got the tools to go into court, and they don't have egg on their face when they do pull up the in-car video, assuming there is. And, or photos from the defendant, it's faded, or it's not 100% there. They can stand tall in court and say, I wrote a good ticket on a good day, and the person should pay the fine, period. And then obviously, hopefully, we can just prevent collisions and prevent that from occurring, but we all know human nature.
Well, it's great to have that enforcement tool, and it's nice to be able, to say, hey, we're not just here to cite you. The city went ahead and put a larger sign out there. They restriped to make it very obvious you need to stop there, and you made the decision.
Yeah.
Not to, for some reason, so that's why you're getting a ticket.
Tom?
Just a suggestion. Maybe it's me. I'm not sure. But Center and Francisco. The stop sign is at the bottom of a slope that, as you're coming up, the trees on the side block the stop sign. For me. Now, somebody that's taller might not have a problem.
I don't make it down that way, so I'm not sure.
But the trees probably need to be trimmed or something else to make it a little bit more visible.
We drive by it every day, so I don't look at it.
Indian guys.
Well, I know.
Hey, wait, close that door for me.
Yeah, I got it.
Thank you.
I think I'd rather be in there. It sounds
like they get that barbecue there.
Well, I saw the catered food coming, and I thought, man, Steve's stepping up for us tonight.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Leak's going first rate.
Yeah, man, this is all right.
Yeah, well, you're relegated to the back room.
Yeah. Steve knows my 2-year term is getting ready to end. He's trying to get me to re-up. Okay.
Will that work?
So let's go to item F, emergency preparedness. Who wants to tackle this one?
That's the Mayor Pro Tem, I think, both of us.
We got that one. Sorry, I was just looking at the Google Earth here and see if I could find an image of what Tom's speaking of, but I'll drive by there again, take a good look myself.
Maybe it's just me.
I doubt it. I think you're probably right on. I mean, you're pretty astute on those things. So I've been trying to work closely with our division chief, Andy Kovacs, and and obviously the chief of the Orange County Fire Authority. And granted, this is more of a fire-related issue rather than law enforcement, but when wildfires happen, guess who this involves? Law enforcement in a big way, because the evacuation, what have you. So in an effort to try to prevent this and educate our residents, and there obviously is a law enforcement angle to fires on occasion, arson investigation, what have you. Whole idea is to try to prevent these things from occurring, and that's what Chief Kovacs and I have been working on. But this particular town hall, and we're trying to put this out there to everybody within the community and every committee, and just raise awareness that we're having what's called a Ready, Set, Go program on September 25th between 6 and 7:30 p.m. in the Villa Park City Hall Council Chambers. And this is going to help prepare our residents to what to do in case of a wildfire, prepared, have their provisions or documents all squared away, emergency ingress, egress, you name it. This is going to cover a lot of those different things. And we're just trying to make sure that our residents have the best possible, they can, number one, fortify their home against fires, brush clearance, what have you, making sure that they've got, if they have those old vents with the quarter-inch gaps, that they're eighth of an inch gaps, so they're up to code so that the embers don't go inside their home, because that's one of the first things that happens. Because you may have a fire a mile away. Well, if it's blowing 30 to 40, I guarantee you the embers are coming. And if they have the more modern grates on it, that's going to be a huge thing. If you have box and eaves, it's a big thing. If you have, most folks have gone away from the wood shake shingle roofs, they're going to tile and composite, that's helpful too. Not having palm trees with a bunch of decayed dead stuff on it, or cypress trees, those can go up. Eucalyptus. Just raising our knowledge and helping us prepare in the event of a wildfire, and making sure that we were able to avoid what Anaheim Hills had to deal with, and parts of OPA, or if they do happen.
Canyon 1, Canyon 2.
Right, Canyon 1, yeah. Canyon 2, put us in the best possible situation.
Are they going to take that? Where's the publicity on that?
We just got it today, this week, and yeah. Kovac sent it. Fire, you should be seeing up the streets. The two should be going up, and we go out in the feeder this week. And just coming out.
And I'm going to send the flyer. I actually looked at the flyer before coming here to the meeting, and I was interrupted by my kids' homework. And I was going to, literally, I was going to send it an email to you with the flyer that's approved, because it's approved now. And then you can put that out to Neighborhood Watch.
All right. Okay. And I see it come out to feed
you. And then, of course, I'll send it out to the LEAC crew, because you guys are huge components of our community.
Are they going to take that?
I don't know that. That's a good question.
I'd love to be there, but I've got a conflict because there's another meeting.
Actually, Fire, we talked about Fire, and they said they'd rather come out and just do another one. They don't have any. They'd rather do these regularly. This is sort of from their perspective.
And I heard the same, that they are willing to come out again. So, if we can pack the hall, or at least get quite a few people in the seats, then they'll come out again and do it. So, and then the next item, John, is the Villa Park Emergency Preparedness Training Program. And this is basically a continuation of what Tom Dodge, obviously the late Pete Moriarty, and Wayne Slezell, and Tom was really the spearhead of kind of getting the CERT program off the ground, and this is just kind of the eventual push towards getting our residents trained up in a community emergency response program.
I'm a certified trainer.
Yeah, and that's awesome. In conjunction, again, with the Orange County Fire Authority, the Sheriff's Department, we're going to be putting on a training program that the OCFA is going to spearhead the training on that. They've got a program already dialed in, and they're going to come to City Hall again at some point in time in October. Mm-hmm. The date has not been finalized. The time has not been finalized. When we have that, we'll let you know. But what we are actively encouraging, and what I would ask Wayne and any of you guys, is put the word out to your neighbors that either might have an interest in this or were involved in the OLTSR program, and make sure that they call City Hall, give us their name, give us their phone number, give us their address, give us their email address, so when we have the date and time, we'll send something out to them immediately and let them know this is the date and the time you expressed interest. This is when the class is going to go on. Now, it's not an official CERT team because of some of the bureaucratic entanglements that Tom was good enough to kind of highlight. And this is a way of trying to avoid that, but yet get a bunch of our residents trained up to know what to do in case of that 10-0 earthquake on the San Andreas Fault or a major wildfire or some other calamity that might occur in and around Villa Park that's going to shut off law enforcement resources and shut off fire department resources for 24, 48, or 72 hours. We need to know how to basically take care of ourselves as individual residents and as individually trained emergency prepared specialists. And in a sense, that's what these people are. They're learning the ins and the outs of what to do and how they can help their community and help the residents. Obviously, that starts at home, having a good 72-hour bag, having some tools to help your neighbors. You know, we're not going to go and collapse buildings and do that kind of stuff. That's not, I think, the focus of this. Basic CPR, first aid, but more of a preparedness. You know, how to shut off a gas line would be a good idea. Some of the basics. This is not a search and rescue type of outfit. That's not what this is focusing on.
When the time comes, I still have the email addresses for everybody that was in the CERT program.
And that would be great.
And I sent out emails to them. I got a positive response from 12.
I'll take 12.
So can we use the Jewel and the Sentry and maybe even the Register to advertise when the program gets up and running on the dates that we have it?
Absolutely.
To get the word out to the community, I think.
They do a whole program. The fire has it. Where I think on the last day they take them over to the fire authority and they have a whole exercise drill that they work them through. So they're all set, and it's all being trained by fire staff how to deal with whatever in your house, how to go back, how to re-enter your house, all things sorts of things.
So do they plan on doing this training program once they run several of them? When, how long of a period do they plan on taking off, and then they'll do it like every other year? Or
I think it really depends upon what kind of response we get.
Right.
It's usually three Wednesdays evenings for written, and then you had the, and we did others too. We did radio.
So I think getting the word out is going to be the most important thing to see how far out it's going to go.
The CERT program is designed for 20 hours, no matter how you put it together. Two and a half Saturdays.
Right. But the question is, I should say, the question that I have and that hasn't quite been answered yet is, how long are they going to take? What are they going to need? And to me, it sounds like it's a one day thing.
I think he told me they've got 4 days now.
Four sessions
because they found that they can't get people locked in for a full day.
Okay.
So they break it into sessions, and that's what Andy said. They're trying to. But the other thing, too, is they're using existing staff to train.
Okay.
So to pull staff, they've got to set it up that way. There's a lot of combinations. So you probably get a better chance of getting people for a couple hours on a Saturday than you do for a full day on Saturday.
How's the word getting out about the town hall?
It'll go out on the feeder, it'll go out on the thing, you'll see the website, you'll see the Wayne's going to get out for Neighborhood Watch,
okay,
and you'll see it on the signs out here.
Okay.
We just got the flyer approved.
What about the Register's got that little community blog for Villa Park on there?
Yeah, it's kind of hit and miss with them, because you got to notify them so far in advance.
Yeah.
The Sentry, you got to notify them so far in advance that it's really difficult.
Right.
But we send it out to them, it's just, you know, we're better off.
Right. Yeah, I think the billboard out there is
the most successful
one.
At that, at getting it all out. He really is.
Mm-hmm. We leave flyers in all the business establishments.
We've got bits where.
And I should, you don't point me, remember, it's Mary.
Okay, I'm giving you credit. So tell Mary I said her name.
All right, anything else on that?
That's all I got.
Okay. All right, we'll move on to committee member comments. I don't have anything to add. Anyone else?
I'd like to just comment how much I appreciate your thoroughness of your reports for the traffic. You went in quite a bit of detail at the city council meeting on your report. I appreciate you getting that because it's helpful for us because then we don't get the questions. How many? I heard we had 5 burglaries last month. Well, then I'd look at my note. No, you didn't have that many. You had 3. You had 2 break-ins, but one was suspected of a child. That, you know, there's a circumstances. There's things for neighbors to worry about. There's things for them not to worry about.
And I try to get that out in my reports, and I appreciate you noticing that. And yeah, you know, I have certain parameters that I have to work within, and I can't give a whole lot of information. But I think we're, the better we educate our citizens, the better off we're all going to be, and the better off they're going to be. So. Thank you.
Before we go, we need to decide what your next meeting is
tonight. Oh, just real quick, do we have another frat house?
Oh, Jesus, no, I hope not.
I know we had one.
That was, we did. We have an ordinance.
Just north of Patel.
We have, just need to tell us if you found
it. Yeah, because I think there's one right off Collins and Wanda there. What do we have, about 3 homes? Just east of Wanda?
If it's on the north side.
On the north side. Are they all ours?
No.
They're not. Is that just one I saw?
There's one that's ours I know of right on the corner closest to Wanda, but I don't know the other two.
No, they're not.
They're not.
I think there is 2.
I have to look at it, but I don't think there's one that clearly there's a couple that are ours.
Okay, well, because I know I saw the sheriff's department there, but of course it could have just been
first responder.
The Villa Park, resident calling. So I was coming back from the
if you get the address
from the fair,
let us know.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much.
About it on Laconia, and also at the end of Fitchin.
Yeah. Anyway, somebody's the Uber driver had just picked up a few people and taken them there, so it was pretty popular.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. FYI.
Well, the other thing too, we did have a lady there that had a party down the street from you guys, and she had over 2 weekends. She had like 100 people there, and I notified you.
Yeah.
It was, remember that? That was huge. It was 2 weekends. So sometimes they notify us, and I'll send him over to the lieutenant and say, you guys know what's going on here. And he's always very good to notify the deputies. But that was an issue. Remember that 2 weekends in a row? Or it was a Saturday and Sunday. It was days, I think. I don't know what it was. But
it was the all weekend long.
She didn't want a parking enforcement and everything else.
Was that invited or?
I don't remember either.
So you heard about the potential frat house from a Uber driver, huh?
And then as he drove me to the house from Orange when they had the fair there,
she came in.
I drove by it and I'm like, okay, there's like 4 or 5 Station 18 units there, so that's why.
Okay.
What day was it?
It was the Saturday during
the
street
fair, right?
That's right, street fair last weekend.
I'll have to look into that.
It was, you could see kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he had dropped off people already, so he had the good intel.
Let's hope not.
So we don't know if it was a frat house from Chapman or something like that. It was a big party.
I would assume that it's going to be Chapman, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So. Well, we'll see.
If you know the address.
Yeah.
I'll look into calls for service also and see.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Anyone else?
Nope.
Tom? Nope. Okay, let's look at scheduling a meeting in November. I know the 5th and the 12th don't work for me. I'm gone. The 19th works, but that's the Monday before Thanksgiving. I don't know if that's...
The 19th is the Monday before Thanksgiving.
I don't know if that's a problem for everyone.
No. Steve, from an election standpoint, where is that at? Do I have any ideas?
It's the 6th of the election.
Okay. So about as far as anything immediately following
the
and
the night.
It's going to take, it takes 30 days
sounds
for the
like
register
the 19th
to certify,
might
so.
Be a good day then, maybe, okay.
Yeah.
The 19th of November?
Yeah, you get started. Okay.
We'll know the results, but we won't have them certified.
Okay.
Okay. Want to lock that down for 10 of
yep.
November 19th?
6 o'clock?
6 o'clock, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And on that, we'll adjourn.